ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So today's verse from Srimad Bhagavatam is from the 7th canto, 1st chapter, texts number 28 and 29. The chapter is entitled, The Supreme Lord is Equal to Everyone. Gita Prasheskrita Rudha Kudyayam Tamanushmaran Samrambhaya Yogena Vindate Tat Swarupatam Eva Krishne Bhagavati Maya Manuja Ishvare Vairena Puta Papmanas Tam apur anuchintaya. Others want to chant?
Gita pesha skrita rudha.
Gita pesha skrita rudha.
Kodhyayam tamanusmaran.
Kodhyayam tamanusmaran.
Samrambha bhaya yogena.
Samrambha bhaya yogena.
Vindate tat sarupatam.
Vindate tat sarupatam.
Evam krishna bhagavati.
Evam krishna bhagavati.
Maya manuja ishvare.
Maya manuja ishvare.
Vairena puta papmanas.
Vairena puta papmanas.
Tamapur anuchintaya.
Tamapur anuchintaya.
Ladies, word meanings Kita, the grass worm, Prasheskrita by a bee, Rudha, confined, Kudyayam, and the hole in a wall, Tam, that bee, Anusmaran, thinking of, Samrabha by a yogena, through intense fear and enmity, Vindate attains Tat of that bee, Swayam Rupatam, the same form, Evam, thus, Krishna, in Krishna, Bhagavati, the personality of Godhead, Maya, Manuje, who appeared by his own energy in his eternal human-like form, Ishvare, the Supreme, Vairena, by enmity, Putra, Papmana, those purified of sins, Tam, him, Apur, attain, Anuchintaya, by thinking of. Translation: a grass worm confined in a hole of a wall by a bee always thinks of the bee in fear and enmity, and later becomes a bee simply because of such remembrance. Similarly, if the conditioned souls somehow or other think of Krishna, who is Satchit Ananda Vigraha, they will become free from their sins, whether thinking of him as their worshipful Lord or an enemy. Because of constantly thinking of him, they will regain their spiritual bodies. So the poor by Srila Prabhupada, do we want to have someone on this side read today? You can share paragraph by paragraph or something.
In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says, Vita raga bhaya krodha man maya mam upashrita bahavo gnana tapasa puta mad bhavam ajata. Being freed from attachment, fear and anger, being fully absorbed in me and taking refuge in me, many, many persons in the past became purified by knowledge of me, and thus they all attained transcendental love for me. There are two ways of constantly thinking of Krishna, as a devotee and as an enemy. A devotee, of course, by his knowledge and tapasya, becomes free from fear and anger and becomes a pure devotee. Similarly, an enemy, although thinking of Krishna inimically, thinks of him constantly and also becomes purified. This is confirmed elsewhere in Bhagavad Gita, where the Lord says, Apichet su duracharo bhajate mam ananya bhak sadhur eva sa mantavya samyag vyavshito hi saha.
Even if one commits the most abominable actions, if he engages in devotional service, he is to be considered saintly because he is properly situated. A devotee undoubtedly worships the Lord with rapt attention. Similarly, if an enemy, always thinks of Krishna, he also becomes a purified devotee. The example given here concerns the grass worm that becomes purified, bee-like, because of constantly thinking of the bee that forces it to enter a hole. By always thinking of the bee in fear, the grass worm starts to become a bee. This is a practical example. Lord Krishna appears within this material world for two purposes. I need glasses to see that. And should I continue or pass? He is not forced? The verse uses the word Maya. Thank you. This is a practical example. Lord Krishna appears within this material world for two purposes. When we say that one, to protect the devotees and annihilate the demons. The sadhus and devotees certainly think of the Lord always, but dushikatas, the demons, like Kamsa and Shishupal, also think of Krishna in terms of killing him. By thinking of Krishna, both the demons and the devotees attain liberation from the clutches of material maya.
Thank you.
The verse uses the word Maya Manuje. When Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, appears in his original spiritual potency, he is not forced to accept a form made by material nature. Therefore, the Lord is addressed as Ishvara, the controller of Maya. He is not controlled by Maya. When a demon continuously thinks of Krishna because of enmity toward him, he is certainly freed from the sinful reactions of his life. To think of Krishna in any way, in terms of his name, form, qualities, paraphernalia, or anything pertaining to him, is beneficial for everyone. Thinking of Krishna, hearing the holy name of Krishna, or hearing the pastimes of Krishna, will make one pure, and then he will become a devotee. Our Krishna conscious movement is therefore trying to introduce the system of somehow or other letting everyone hear the holy name of Krishna and take Krishna prasad. Thus, one will gradually become a devotee and his life will become successful.
Thank you. This verse and purport illustrate a lot about the study of Krishna consciousness. And I think that the first thing I want to point out to you about this is that this verse and purport have to be read very carefully, because there are very subtle differences that are being explained here. So just with that sort of introduction, let's back up and get some perspective on where we are here. Is this the first time you've entered the seventh canto? Okay, so this is the first time we've entered the seventh canto. Actually, seventh canto is a wonderful canto. The Srimad Bhagavatam contains the pastimes of Prahlad Maharaj. And if I think you check Prabhupada's lectures, he lectured on Prahlad Maharaj's instructions probably more than any other place in the Srimad Bhagavatam. He was very fond of Prahlad Maharaj's instructions. And even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he would hear the Bhagavatam being recited every day, he would go, when he was in Puri, Gadadhar Pandit would recite the Bhagavatam. And when he got to the pastimes of Prahlad Maharaj, Gadadhar Pandit would recite it, and then he would say, repeat it again. And so he would repeat the whole thing again. He said, repeat it again. And he repeat it again. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very much relished these instructions. So seventh canto is a wonderful canto, and I wish you all fortune in going through it. But a little bit about the structure of the Bhagavatam also we can understand, because in the sixth canto at the end, what was happening? Everyone remember what was happening? Huh? Okay. Right. And then there was a battle, right? I mean, between the demons and the demigods, Vritrasura and Indra. And Indra killed Vritrasura. And this provoked a question in the mind of Maharaj Parikshit. And so this is the first thing, this sort of structural thing we can see about Srimad Bhagavatam, is that it's a conversation between guru and disciple. And therefore, there are not just recitations of different pastimes of the Lord or prayers or different instructions, but we can actually see that the structure is built on questions and answers. Sukadeva goes, Maharaj Parikshit heard something that was a little confusing to him. And that confusing was, it seems like the Supreme Lord is just taking the side of the demigods, you know, and how was that? I mean, I thought he was supposed to be equal to everyone. I thought the Supreme Lord is everyone's Supreme Lord, and so why should he have favorites, the demigods, over the demons? And so that question came in his mind after hearing how the Lord seemingly favored Indra against Vritrasura and the demons. And so therefore he placed that question before his spiritual master, And that's the beginning of the seventh canto here. So structurally, we move through the Bhagavatam like that. Who remembers the situation, how we move from the fifth canto to the sixth canto? Does anybody remember that? Yes, there was a description of the hellish planets at the end of the fifth canto. And so that also provoked some questions in Maharaj Prakshit's mind, and therefore he asked about those things at the beginning of the sixth canto. And so that was explained to him there. So this question and answer format, guru explaining to disciple, disciple inquiring from the guru, is part of the structure of the Srimad Bhagavatam, how it's built. Now there's another structural element that comes here, and it's in the first chapter of the seventh canto, earlier verses to what we're doing today. Maharaj Prakshit had this question, so he asked Sukadeva Goswami. But what did Sukadeva Goswami do in response? Does anybody know if you've gone over it at all? If you haven't, huh? Right. Are you the only one that's ready? Okay. Okay, well, I'm going to repeat what he said. What he did was he referred back to another conversation. And this is also a pattern we'll find throughout the Bhagavatam, that when a question is asked, the speaker refers back to a previous historical incident where the same question was asked, the same situation was addressed. And so here, when Maharaj Prakshit asks Sukadeva Goswami, Sukadeva Goswami refers back to a conversation between Yudhisthira Maharaj and Narada Muni. Because apparently this question of the Lord's partiality had come up before. And it came up in the situation where in the assembly of the Rajasuya sacrifice, Sisupal had apparently reached his limit of blasphemy of the Supreme Lord, and therefore he was killed by Krishna Sudarshan Chakra right there in the assembly. And the amazing thing is that everyone saw his soul leave his body and merge into the body of Krishna. And so that created the same kind of question in his mind, is that how is this possible? Sisupal was such an offensive person, always blaspheming you and always working against your interest. How is it that he got the liberation of merging into your body when that's only achieved by very great sages and saints who go through all kinds of austerity and meditation? How did he receive that? And so the question about... So Narada Muni answered the question in terms of partiality of the Lord and how he's equal to everyone. So those are some things that happen in the first chapter of the seventh canto. And in the second chapter of the seventh canto, we're introduced to Hiranyakasipu, the father of Pallad Maharaj. And that whole story of Pallad Maharaj is also based on this same, answering this same question about the partiality of the Lord. So you can see how structurally the work, the Srimad Bhagavatam, expands on the basis of questions and historical references like that. So I think it's important to know as we go through our study of Srimad Bhagavatam, because it gives us some structure, and sometimes we get absorbed in the individual pastimes of stories and we forget the structure of the work. So that's there. Anybody have any questions about that aspect? Yes, Damodar. Okay, we're going to use a mic for him there.
Canto is an English word, right?
Canto is an English word.
Right. The Sanskrit is kanda.
Skanda.
Kanda.
Like skanda, is it?
Without
skanda.
Skanda? Oh, okay. Is there any connection, and what does it mean?
What does
canto mean?
Oh, canto.
Okay.
Some division, literary or poetic division or something like that. An assembly of chapters. All right. Okay.
And when Sisupal merged into Krishna's body, we often hear it's not possible to become one with Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
We merge into his effulgence, but Sisupal merged directly into Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened to him?
Well, we're going to talk about that in the class today as we get a little further in there.
Okay, right,
so
you.
We'll do that. Yes.
What is the meaning of that grass form becomes a bee? Like, becomes a bee in next lifetime, or how does it become a bee?
This is also another interesting characteristic of studying the Bhagavatam, is that not only are there the main questions we're going through here, the main question here is dealing with the impartiality of the Lord, but there are also other instructions, other information that we get, you know, from reading this. And so that I was going to point that out also. This whole idea of how by meditating on something you attain that quality. That's a whole subject that could be, many, you know, discussions could be had about just how the material nature works in that way. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, yam yam vapi smaram bhavam chajat dante kalevaram tam tam ivaiti kontaya sadatad bhava bhavita. He explains that whatever one's thinking of at the time of death, the subtle body, which is our mind, intelligence, and ego, if we're absorbed in something, it takes a form. It takes a physical form. So at the time of death, however we're absorbed, we take that absorption in our subtle body, and we get the next gross body that represents those thoughts, those feelings, those desires. And so this principle works in the world about how what we're absorbed in, we become like that. I mean, even modern psychologists will tell you things like that if you're absorbed in, you know, anger or enmity towards someone, you take on the qualities and characteristics of that person. And so this idea of mental absorption becoming physically manifest is what's being explained here. And so whether it happens in that life, and sometimes it does, like the moth through meditation, the moth or the caterpillar worm becomes a butterfly through meditating on changing the form like that. Or whether it requires another body, the same principle as at work here is that as we're absorbed mentally, we physically manifest that form at a later date. So that's what's science being presented here. Is it accepted? Yeah, well, why not? Well, you know, let's expand it beyond just the grass worm and the bee. Let's expand it to in a human life. You know, hatred. If you're absorbed in hatred of, you know, say you're a Nazi and you're absorbed in hatred of the Jews, and that's your meditation. You're thinking about them all the time. You know, and you know, then what happens to you at the time of death? What you meditate on in your life, you manifest in your next life. And so that cycle of samsara is built on this principle of meditation, desire, absorption, and then obtaining the facility to do that. That's the way Krishna facilitates the living entities in this world. By their desire, Krishna gives you that. Yayatam mam papajante tam sitavi bhajami aham. Mama Vart Manu Vartante Manusha Parta Sarvasa. All men, all living entities follow this rule that as they surrender to him. And so as we desire, we are limited beings. We're always like that. We desire, Krishna fulfills desire. And so if we have a desire that's manifest in form, as I said, of hatred toward a particular person or particular idea or something like that, we are absorbed in that, then we're expressing a desire that is fulfilled by Krishna. And so that is how the cycle of samsara runs. And so, again, whether it happens in the same life or whether it happens in the next life, the principle works. So, yes, that is true. Okay. Okay.
Between guru and disciple, was that your main point, or was there something else about the
well, it's question and answers.
Okay, question and answer.
Question cool. and answers.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then I know we got to get going. I had one quick comment though.
Okay.
About just thinking of at the time of death, that we're expected to whatever we are desiring, whatever we're thinking, we attain this in our next life. So, just thinking maybe how difficult it could be for us, even focus on devotional service in this particular time in our life. So at the time of death, it seems like it would just be so much harder. So that this, it's really important that we, really take it seriously. And because, we're thinking about so many things in a day. So we're constantly just trying to think of Krishna and then at the time of death. And
that's very good. Yes. So
it seems like it'd be harder at time of death.
It will be harder at the time of death.
So
and therefore,
it's hard now, you can imagine that.
Yeah, therefore we practice now. That's what the sadhana bhakti is. We practice because at the time of the two things, at the time of death, it's going to be very difficult, as you said. The body is going to be, functions are going to be going all this way and that way. And so how are we going to focus our mind? It'll be difficult. And so if we're not practiced, we won't be able to do it. But there's also another factor is that we don't know when death's going to come anyway. We could, any time we could walk out the door and death could be there, So, we have to be ready. So constant practice in chanting the holy names of the Lord, trying to be absorbed in Krishna so we don't become a grass worm and then become a bee and then, all these things over and over again. Okay, so let's go to the subject I was mentioning at the beginning of the class today, and that is how we have to read this purport very carefully because if you recall, the purport says some things that are very, very interesting. It says, basically, in a broad overview, that no matter how you think of Krishna, whether you think of Krishna as your worshipful Lord, or if you think of him as your enemy, you get the same result. Is that what the purport says? Who says yes? I'm setting you up. Who said yes? What? Who said yes? Okay. Well, it almost says the same thing. It says that the translation says, whether thinking of him as their worshipful Lord or as an enemy, because of constantly thinking of him, they regain their spiritual bodies. That would seem to indicate that it doesn't matter whether you think of Krishna in a favorable way or an unfavorable way. You get your spiritual body. But is that our philosophy? Why not? Who said no? Balabha Sain, were you saying?
Well, depending on the attitude that we approach. Depending on the attitude, the mentality that we approach Krishna, we'll get a different result. Even though we won't, as an enemy, one can achieve liberation. That's not the same thing as becoming an intimate servant of the Lord in the spiritual sky. You become liberated from the material life in both existence, in both endeavors, but one is an eternal result, which is pure devotional service, and the other is, merging in the Brahma Jyoti for some period of time and then falling back down again.
Okay. Now let's look at the purport very carefully to see where we can see this instruction. I'll read here since it may be difficult for you to follow it up there. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada said, a devotee, of course, by his knowledge and tapasya, becomes free from fear and anger and becomes a pure devotee. Similarly, an enemy, although thinking of Krishna inimically, thinks of him constantly and also becomes purified. So there's a difference. Prabhupada's showing a difference here. Becoming a pure devotee and becoming purified. And again, this is very crucial to this understanding, and it begins with this idea about partiality. If the Lord's partial, the Lord is not partial, because partiality is something that comes from the conditioned material world. We know from Bhagavad Gita, there's a verse, 7:27. Does anybody know that one? Right off the top of their head? Icha dvesha samudhena dvanda mohena bharata. Yes. O Saina Bharata, O conqueror of the foe, all living entities are born into delusion, bewildered by dualities arisen from desire and hate. Now, this is a description of the living entity, how he's affected by the modes of material nature. That's where the duality comes from. But if Krishna is not subject to the modes of material nature, then there's no basis for duality arising in his person or his actions. And so he can't be partial. He's not partial. That's not part of his nature, because partiality comes from the conditioned influence of the modes of material nature. So thinking of Krishna can't result in some kind of partiality. And so therefore, both the favorable person and the unfavorable person get some benefit. But the benefit is different, as Balabha Sain said, depending on what is our relationship with Krishna. If we're favorable to Krishna, we become a pure devotee. We get pure devotional service. And if we're unfavorable to Krishna, we get purified. Prabhupada says purified. What does that purified means? Yeah, well, purified could mean a lot of different things. It could mean that that we get sort of an impersonal kind of liberation. It could even mean that we get different levels of liberation. How many types of liberation are there? Five types of liberation. Who can name? Can we name all the five? Same planet as the Lord. Same form as the Lord. Same quality opulences. Same. So we have two more. That's another one. In person. To be near the Lord. Samipya. Okay. So, yeah, these are five types of liberation. And here we get into an understanding that understanding Krishna is not such a simple matter, because there's all these different types of liberation. And so when somebody speaks about becoming purified or achieving liberation, as an advanced student, you should all begin thinking that, well, wait a minute, what type of liberation are you referring to? Because it's not all just one. There are different levels that one can achieve. Indeed, the Goswamis, Srila Rupa Goswami has described in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Prabhupada has given it as Nectar of Devotion, he's described how we should think of Krishna, what is recommended in the way we think of Krishna. Yes, he says, Anyabhi lasita sunyam jnana kamadhyanavritam anukulyena krishnanu silanam bhaktir uttama. This is actually a definition of devotional service. And so we can see that this is a more advanced kind of knowledge that we have about Krishna. The Bhagavatam obviously gives us this distinction is being made by Prabhupada in the purport here. But there's more. Again, Krishna is not just a simple subject. There are more subtle understandings that can be had. And so in this verse from the Bhakti-rasamrita Sindhu we just read, it specifically said, anukulyena, that one should favorably think of Krishna. Not that one can think of Krishna as described in the verse here, favorably or unfavorably. That it's recommended by the Goswamis who have studied the Shastra and extracted the essence for our benefit. It's recommended by Rupa Goswami that we should think favorably of the Lord, because that will give us a more intimate situation with the Lord. Again, the same verse we quoted before. Yaya tam mam papajante tam sitaivi bhajami aham. As we surrender to Krishna, He rewards us accordingly. So if we surrender to Him with a favorable attitude, rather than just being absorbed negatively or inimically toward Him, then we'll get a different result. And what is the result that the devotees get? What does the pure devotees get as opposed to one who is purified? Pure devotion, but what do they attain? Love for Krishna, but what? Service to Krishna. All these are true. Their eternal form in relation to Krishna. Yeah, okay. So he was right. He came back to be right this time. So he was... They attained Krishna Loka. They attain that place where one can, in a completely free way, engage in loving exchanges with the Lord. There's no awe and reverence. There's no sense even in Goloka Vrindavan. There's no sense even that Krishna is God. There's no awe and reverence that's there. He's just the complete lovable object of everyone. Now that's a very, very intimate understanding and relationship with the Supreme Lord. But it's not achievable for someone who thinks inimically. How does it make logical sense that you can achieve that relationship, that kind of an intimate relationship with the Lord, loving relationship with the Lord, if you're thinking inimically about Him? It's not possible. Putana. So what about Putana? Give him the mic. So Krishna Kripa was given an example, which further complicates now the study of Krishna is not a simple subject matter. He's given an example of Putana, who approached Krishna with an inimical attitude and attained the position of being one of her, like her mother. She nursed Krishna, so she became like Krishna's mother. So Putana in that state is the same as Mother Yasoda? Is she? Is that what our acharyas have said? It sounds like it too, yes? Okay. I'm going to give him the mic from here.
Just that there's a background that you have to see that Putana had previously had transcendental affection for Krishna and a relationship, but somehow or other had become angry with Krishna and had some anger that clouded her love. But that it's not that randomly she had that interaction. It was arranged so that she could clarify her, or that she had only was only inimical to Krishna. There's some background of love there that made her attain the Krishna Loka.
Yeah, I think that the story is that Putana was formerly the sister of Bali Maharaj. That's correct. And that when Bali Maharaj appeared, she was very attracted to him in a motherly way because he's small, you know. Vamandev. When Vamandev appeared, he's very small. He's dwarf Brahmana. And she was captivated by his beauty. One of the qualities of Vamandev is that he's extremely beautiful. And so she was attracted like that. And so she had a motherly attraction. But then it turned sour, as Garrison is telling us. It turned sour, something, and she turned a little inimical. And so her situation of being able to be Putana and come and offer that motherly affection by offering her breast like that, was based on some kind of history. It was based on history, which is another thing that we have to be careful about when we're studying the Bhagavatam, is try to understand the times that are involved here and the lives and everything that's involved. It's a very complex situation. Everything is very complex. And so, additionally, not only did she have that background, which it gave her the ability, she had some affection like that, but it's also explained that she did not attain a position like Mother Yasoda. She attained a more distant motherly relationship with Krishna, not an intimate relationship like Mother Yasoda. Again, yayatam mam pabhajyante tam sitaya bhajamiham. As you surrender, Krishna rewards you accordingly. And even in Goloka Vrindavan, there are those more intimate with Krishna and those a little bit. But they still, I mean, obviously, you're not a loser in going to Goloka Vrindavan. Actually, no one's a loser even if they approach Krishna unfavorably and get this purification Prabhupada's talking about here. They're not the loser because they gain benefit. Krishna is everyone's eternal benefactor, and any interaction we have with him benefits us and takes us closer to him. And so, therefore, we have the instruction in this verse. Not that the instruction in this verse is wrong. Obviously, it's correct that by coming in contact with Krishna, even anemically, one, as it says here in the verse, they regain their spiritual bodies. And Prabhupada says, even further in the purport, he says, similarly, if an enemy always thinks of Krishna, he also becomes a purified devotee. So, it's not black and white. I mean, it's a complex understanding. What does it mean that he becomes a purified devotee? Maybe it means that he goes to one of the Vaikuntha planets. And in the Vaikuntha planets, what's characteristic of the relationship with the Lord in the Vaikuntha planets that's different than Goloka Vrindavan? Yeah, there's awe and veneration there. There's not an intimate exchange with the Lord. There's love for the Lord, there's interaction with the Lord, but it's awe and veneration, which is, according to our acharyas, not a desirable destination. Why would you choose that kind of a destination when you can have an intimate, loving relationship with Krishna as a friend, parent, lover, servant, why would you choose an awe and veneration relationship when you can have that? But it's not that this is wrong. It's just that we need to understand it very deeply. Therefore, we have to go over these things carefully. Follow what I'm saying. You want to give him the mic? Where are we at?
Prabhupada was saying that there was not a necessity to aim at a particular relationship with the Lord, but that a relationship was already existing that we already had with the Lord, and that when we become sufficiently purified, that relationship will then be revealed to us. Not that we should think, oh, I'd rather have this one over that one, but there's actually a relationship already completely satisfying and completely there within us already.
Right.
Is that right?
Well, what we've been given by Srila Prabhupada and the previous acharyas is the method to develop our most intimate relationship with Krishna. And so we should not become distracted from that by being attracted by either the opulences of this material world or anything else that would deter us actually from the path that they've given us. We've been given a gift that we are not qualified for, in one sense. That's the advent of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes and he gives a process by which everyone, regardless of where they are or how they got there, it gives everyone the chance to develop this, to go back home, back to Godhead. This is Rupa Goswami's realization when he saw Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Namo Mahavanandaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gora Tivase Namaha. He was amazed. And what was his amazement? His amazement was is that by following what you've come to give, we can all attain the highest relationship, love of Krishna, Krishna Prema. We can attain that. That Krishna Prema is not available in worshiping other incarnations of the Lord. It's not available by simply the performance of austerities or study of the Shastra. It's available by the process given of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu of chanting the holy name of the Lord. And so, yes, we should focus on that and not worry about what our destination is going to be. But we know from the Acharya's encouragement and understanding that that relation will be to achieve the highest possible relationship we can have with Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. And so we should fully, with full confidence and faith, take to that path and not worry, oh, maybe I should take this path to cover these bases or take that path to cover those things just to make sure that I'm doing everything. No, it's a complete process. Sankirtan, yajna. Yes?
So, when you were in the Japa workshop, it was said that the impersonalists also chant Hare Krishna and they do not have the same benefit as the devotees because they don't accept the relationship with Krishna. I mean, they're not favorable. So, is that the reason? I mean, the process of chanting also includes our desire where we want to go?
Well, impersonalist chanting the holy name is not done with the type of surrender that devotees chant the holy name with. Its desire is done with some desire or some misconception about the absolute truth. And so unless we clear up those things, then we can be chanting offensively or we can be chanting fruitively and we won't be chanting purely. And so, therefore, we study the Shastra, the instructions of Guru. We study the Srimad Bhagavatam just like this. We study these examples that are being discussed here. What is the difference between the type of surrender I'm doing, the type of service I'm doing, the type of chanting I'm doing, to make sure that it is in the line of the pure devotees so that we attain that result, not that we do it offensively or chant for material gain or chant for liberation, thinking that that's the goal. And so both things have to be there. We follow the process, but it's a process that as we become more mature students, we have to understand the distinctions. Initially, we're going to tell everybody, chant Hare Krishna, and there may be a crowd of people. Some people may be chanting just with an idea they're going to become one with the Lord. But we don't say, don't chant. We say, we encourage everyone to chant. But as students become more mature, we have to understand these subtleties and differences, just like we're exploring in the purport here today. I think you had something?
In this talk that those who are unfavorable approach, who are thinking of Krishna in an unfavorable way, they're more absorbed than those who are thinking favorably.
Well, I don't know that he says that or not.
I'm not too sure exactly how it's portrayed, but how he has said, but something to that effect, that those who are in fear or in enmity towards thinking of Krishna in that way, their absorption is higher than those thinking in favorably.
Let's say their absorption is deeper rather than saying higher. But the point is that that's understandable, isn't it? If you're afraid, if you're trying to think of something or somebody and you're thinking and this and that, there's two things that will make you really think about that person, right? One either is that you got a real strong love for that person. You can't get it out of your mind, you know. That's one type of absorption. Another is fear. Oh, you know, anything could happen, you know, and you're always worried like that. And so intense emotions are going to make our absorption deeper. Therefore, we want to chant with love. We want to be absorbed in loving relationship with Krishna so that remembrance is constant. But unfortunately, negative emotions are also very strong and they can absorb us as well. And so we need to be careful of negative emotions in relation to Krishna also. A lot of times devotees even, they get absorbed in sort of a negative emotions toward Krishna. But that's not going to help as much as a positive emotion. So that's our line. Yes, Damodar?
You said, I'm a little confused about how Prabhupada's using this verse here, Vajate Mam Ananyabhak. Even if one commits the most abominable activities, if he's fully engaged in devotional service and his intelligence, his determination is fixed on attaining the goal, then he's a sadhu. But how does Shishupal have his intelligence fixed on attaining Krishna?
Well,
and then second part of my question is, what happened to him when he immersed in Krishna's body?
Okay, he got a type of liberation. Now, maybe someone knows technically which type of liberation it was. I don't. But I think that what Prabhupada is saying here is that even if your absorption is negative or abominable actions, even if one commits an abominable action, even if one has an inimical outlook, an inimical intention, because it's connected with Krishna, that negative intention will benefit one. And so sometimes we commit abominable actions. Of course, we commit abominable actions that have nothing to do with Krishna. But Sisupal, he was committing abominable actions that were specifically focused on Krishna. And so I think he's emphasizing that specific focus, even though the activities were inimical. But that benefited him so that he got the type of liberation. Now, the type of liberation, he merged into the body of Krishna, was it Sayujya? Okay. Merging into the body of the Lord is a type of liberation, which is good. I mean, we want to be liberated, but it's not that we want impersonal liberation. We want the type of liberation that allows us to interact with Krishna as a friend or lover. Like that.
So Shishupala is a sadhu?
He's benefited as if he were a sadhu.
Okay.
Okay.
And you said that prema is not available for other incarnations of Krishna. Like you can't have Vamana prema?
Well, you can have Krishna prema. Is not available by worshiping other incarnations. Krishna prema is not available. You want Krishna prema, you have to worship Krishna.
But you can't have Vamana prema.
I do. Come to my house. I'll show you. Yes.
Thank you.
Yamaraj. No, Yamaraj, there. I shouldn't say I do. I pray, I should say, not I do.
Yes.
Yes, Yamaraj.
I remember when I was in Chicago and Dr. Tiddaswamy had a program it was like a bunch of psychiatrists there.
Yeah.
And so the majority of them were doctors and psychiatrists and things like that. So anyway, they started talking about, it got to the question and answer section. And so this one particular guy, he was a vowed atheist, and he was asking questions, some very good questions. So later on the way, we took Maharaj home, Maharaj was saying that out of all of the people in the room who were, favorable and unfavorable, he said this particular guy, because of his questions, and I don't know if it was this, because of his field of dealing with people and things like that, but he said he asked the best questions and he had a good opportunity to, I think his conclusion was, and I may be wrong about this, but that he had a good opportunity to become really close to Christian, because he said his questions were really good, better than anyone there, you know. So the point is, I think a lot of times socialization has a lot to do with people being atheists, and you know, a lot of bad things happen in the world or whatever, and then they don't see the Lord in some kind of way, you know.
And right. Well, I think that's true. I mean, it says that the atheists know the Bible better than the Christians. They're absorbed in it, you know.
And just lastly, because he got the opportunity to meet a pure devotee. So, I mean.
But the problem probably is he didn't take advantage of it.
Yeah.
Our knowledge, our austerities, penance, you know, they may bring us to the point of meeting the pure devotee where we're offered Krishna. But if we don't take it, and we probably won't due to our preconceived ideas, then what is the use of all those things? Hare Krishna.